Good afternoon. You're listening to Scariff Bay Community Radio and Local Media This Week, the programme where we have a look at what the local media are saying, the Clare Champion and the Clare Echo, and we give our own take on it and we point out a few things that you might like to read yourself when you get the papers. We're great supporters of the Clare print media here. It's great to have two newspapers here in the county, and long may that last. Now, we have most of our usual panel today. We've John S. Kelly. John, you're welcome.
Thank you, Jim.
We've Pat O'Brien back after last week. He was absent, so good to see you, Pat.
Thanks, Jim.
And off the bench again, not named on the starting lineup, is Luke Fleming. Luke, good to see you.
Thanks, Jim.
Now, we have a look at the front pages, I suppose, of the papers. And I suppose we're sick of talking about it, but UHL, Pat, UHL comes up again. We had the inquest this week into Aoife Johnson. I think the paper was out before the medical misadventure verdict was returned. But it makes very, very depressing reading, I think.
Well, I suppose it's tragic for the Johnson family, really, you know, what happened. And I suppose the spotlight is in them all week with the inquest out in the Kilmallock, in the courthouse in Kilmallock. Just ahead in here, Dan Danaher has said, Aoife's tragic death, an open wound for Johnson family. Inquest here that overcrowding is still a major problem at Limerick Hospital. A nurse manager was told that an emergency consultant declined to attend the University Hospital Limerick Emergency Department amid serious overcrowding concerns. An inquest into the death of Clare teenager Aoife Johnson, 16, heard on the third day of proceedings that a nurse manager was informed that an ED consultant would attend in the event of a major emergency, but was not due to patient volume concerns. Aoife Johnson presented at UHL at 5:40 p.m. on December 17, 2022. Clinicians found that the hospital protocol on sepsis, which requires sepsis queried patients to be seen urgently, was not followed. She was not triggered until 7:15 p.m. that night and did not receive antibiotics until it was too late. She died on UHL on December 19th.
I suppose, Pat, it sounds, from listening to it during the week and from what, it sounds totally chaotic.
It was, yeah, it was. I suppose it's all over the radio and television and all week and the papers. And I suppose it's very depressing for the Johnson family, and it opens the wound again on the daughter.
I wonder, is it an open wound for all of us? Because, you know, we've often discussed this, John, this business of trolleys and delays and problems in Limerick has been ongoing for well more than 10 years, maybe up to 15 years.
Indeed.
And is there any sign of an end to it?
Well, I see huge difficulty with the lack of physical capacity. We could come up with excellent suggestions here as to what should happen. But we're faced then with two stumbling blocks. One is personnel, leave those aside for a minute. And the second is, in fact, physical capacity. And the damnable thing about physical capacity is it takes time to actually, answer that one. If all the money in the world were thrown there on the table to you, it doesn't solve the speed question.
No, but I mean, the speed question, you have to take into context that it's been well over a decade since, you know, this has been highlighted.
Well, there are thousands of people listening to this program now, and they've been reading in their newspapers about it as well. And I wonder, what impact does it have on their desire for change, and what kind of change would they, you know, suggest?
And I suppose, you know, do politics come into it? I mean, our politicians can read the papers like we do, politicians in Clare, Limerick and Tip. I mean, they can't be happy with what's happening and what hasn't been happening.
Why didn't they, all the politicians from the different parties, come together to form a phalanx of, you know, opposition to what has been happening, as you said earlier there, to what has been happening for 10, 15 years.
Yes.
Longer. Mm. Do you remember any of the debate that went on?
Well, of course, when Limerick and Nina were closed many years ago, people pointed this out at the time. There were marches, I'd say I was on one of them myself, to stop the closure of Ennis or to stop the downgrading of Ennis. And it seems the worst fears of the, you know, protesters at the time have been realised. Mm. And we have a disastrous situation. And I mean, God be good to her, Aoife Johnson, she's not the only one. We had another man found dead after an hour.
Yeah,
under a trolley.
Under a trolley, yeah.
And, you know, and there's an increasing number of these. Mm. And there doesn't seem to be any action from the government. We can, you know, nobody blames the people working there, because by the sound of the paper during the week, it's chaos. And who'd want to work in that kind of scenario?
And that's reflected in...
I think you should state that no one working on the ground.
Yes.
Should, you know, it's the people higher up the chain that I think are unaccountable, and I don't know, do they care? Because you would think if they did care, they'd be coming out and roaring and shouting, saying, we don't have the resources to do X, Y, or Z. But they've thrown so much money at it, and it's only, what has it done? It hasn't made it any better. There's no political joint initiative to do anything in relation to this. And until the politicians from the three constituencies grow a pair and do something about it, nothing will happen. Because the only way that this can get resolved is two steps. But it's there. It's a two-step solution.
Yes.
They say there is investment going on. Fair enough. But the issue is the numbers that are there, and the population that the hospital has to cater for are out of sync with every other hospital in the country. Mm. As you said, you don't hear these problems in Waterford. The hospital that Waterford deals with, I think, about 350,000 people, give or take. Limerick is dealing with over 500,000.
You made a suggestion which I found attractive earlier before we went on air, okay? And that was to analyse the nature of the reasons why people head for the actual, what do you call it, head for the accident and emergency, okay? And when you think about the orthopaedic unit out in Croom, and how much that takes off, you know, the accident and emergency in Limerick, when you think about the little unit in Ennis, if I break a wrist, I don't have to head into accident and emergency. And you wonder, in fact, if that could be extended. Was that the point you were making? Okay.
Which that would make sense, so it won't happen.
But we could, and you don't have to be a doctor at all to actually come up with an analysis of the reasons why people head off are sent in to accident and emergency. Isn't that right?
Yeah, but like it has been indicated that if you require an ambulance to be called, you will be brought to A&E.
Irrespective.
No matter what.
Really, yeah.
Now, well, that course can be changed easily enough, can't it?
Oh, I'm sure there's probably someone will sue maybe in relation to it, but there has to be, someone has to sort of get a bit of an idea and a bit of a notion in relation to this, that an outbreak of common sense is needed in relation to some of it. Anybody that appears to be in the know in relation to the amount of people that attend at A&E say that there are a large number of people that should be nowhere near an A&E.
Mm.
That's the nub of the problem that has been allowed to develop and fester and nothing has been done about it. So that's where you need to start. You have staffing issues and everything else like that. Like the reading in the papers there is absolutely heartbreaking. But like, what type of a country are we claiming to be? If a person is brought into an emergency department before 5 o'clock on a Saturday evening with a letter from her doctor with suspected sepsis, and she's not given antibiotics until 7 a.m. the following day, 14 hours for antibiotics, which, just looking at page 6 of the Echo, the article headline is, earlier antibiotics, quote, highly likely to have saved Shannon T.
That's the great sadness of this, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. We say for Aoife, her family, her friends, everybody. But she, unfortunately, she's not alone. But how can we as a country allow this to happen?
Mm.
But there's plenty of other issues out there as well. I think we could probably spend the whole program.
There, but it is still a very serious issue if somebody is brought, you know, to a high-class facility, so-called, for something that there is a straightforward cure for in the place, and it never gets to her.
Yeah.
I think that's an open wound for all of us. Yeah. And, you know, I look forward to hearing what proposals the government have in relation to Limerick, because
I wouldn't be looking forward to them, Jim, because I don't think they'll do anything.
You need
proper political pressure with politicians. Again, it goes back to the whole issue. What senior ministers have we in the Midwest? We don't have one.
We don't. No. Luke, do you recall when the 15 years ago, Jim, when the Centre of Excellence was bandied about in the media here?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you recall that?
We were told it was going to be a Centre of Excellence when Ennis and Nina and St John's were closing.
Well, that's a benchmark, a Centre of Excellence. So it'll be interesting to see, does that come into the conversation when the government and the civil service world, you know, come to grip, try to come to grip.
On what Luke was saying there, I'd have to calculate, but there's 12 to 15 TDs in the area around.
And senators,
I mean, that if they were serious about doing something, and if that 12 to 15 TDs got together, something would happen, because the government haven't a huge majority.
Mm.
But of course, it probably won't.
Well, I approach the reflections of my fellow man with great confidence, and mistakes have been made, tragic ones, but there's a learning involved too.
There surely is. Will it happen?
Yeah, I think the learning was many years ago, John.
Do you?
But again, the issue is, when will someone high up the chain admit that a mistake was made with what they have done? And you could couch it with the fact that, combine it with the fact that our population has increased significantly in the meantime, and that there is no additional hospital capacity has been provided.
Yeah. Scott Carmel has been mentioned, hasn't it, in passing, at the top of O'Connell Avenue. Am I right?
There is something happening with it.
Is there something happening? Or they're talking about it?
Well, they were talking about it. It was in the paper recently about it, that they were putting in some facility there.
Well, if you had to work day and night to speed up the actual... I mean, this, it's the kind of situation that asks... A war zone has been mentioned, if you don't...
Well, John, just take it now. I've been in notice of UN for the last fortnight.
Yes.
And I was in... But anyway, there's a new block inside, it's most 96 bed block, and they have a car park underneath, two car parks, there's one down and you go down and you go down to the other one. It's grand, it's lovely, and you can go up there in the lift up to the new section that's already built from there. up in the lift, and there's different floors and on up to the top. But there's an old 96 block being built into it all. Up you have the what you call the scaffolding and all up, and there's fellas working there. But there's no one working there on a Saturday. And there was no one working there. I was coming out of there this evening at 4 o'clock, and all the lads were going home. And there was no one else working there, I'd say just close down until in the morning. At 4 o'clock this evening.
What do you think of that, Jim?
Yeah. I mean that is crazy.
Huh?
Absolutely. Yes. Because I mean you have to respond to illnesses or patient conditions that arise.
Yes.
And you can't say someone is fine until Monday when I go in.
Yes.
There were all these builders and all these fellas, carpenters and all, were heading off home after building site. Yeah. And I was in there last Saturday. I was, and
there's nobody there.
There was no one working, and no, the builders, no the actual construction.
That's workers. The first time now that has been mentioned in the media.
And you imagine they'd be working. At this time of the year, they could work from, you could run two shifts, one at 4 to 12.
Oh, yeah.
You could, of course.
And one the morning, and one at 4 to 12.
The nurses are inside doing exactly that.
And then,
aren't they?
They are, of course.
They could work all day Saturday, and they could work all day Sunday as well, if they
We might as well go on, because we're fed up of talking about this.
We have to give our sympathies to the Johnson family on what happened.
Yes. And I'd be afraid, how many more people will have to die in A&E before something is done.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got a slightly better story. Shannon Airport. Look, 2 million people using Shannon Airport last year, which is a very positive story.
Well, it is, Jim, but personally, I'd be a lot happier if it was 4 or 5 million.
Yeah, but at least it's going the right direction.
It is, but you still have the issues that the destinations that are there aren't sufficient, I think, to get it to where we all want it to be, and where, unfortunately, Dublin don't want it to be, because they want to sort of keep it all to themselves. But I note as well in relation to it in the Clare Echo, I did read it, sorry, I did hear about it. The fabled 343 route in Shannon, the bus.
Which one is that, David?
Oh, this is the bus from Shannon to Limerick that never turns up half the time, John. But there are plans, a bit of an outbreak of common sense, I would suggest, that to turn it into a 24-hour service, with a half hour in and out from Limerick out to the airport, right? This makes sense, and should have happened probably
long ago.
Long ago. Mm. So it's going to be operated by Bus Éireann. We'll operate by Bus Éireann, run 24 hours a day, and it says with buses every 60 minutes throughout the night. Now, the comparison I will give you, John, is if you are in Dublin Airport, you can get a bus in or out of Dublin Airport literally on the hour, half hour, pretty much up until about 12:30 at night. And then there's a bit of a break until the next bus, we say, leaving the airport might be about 4 o'clock. Okay? But if you want to get a bus up to the airport, they'll have you up there for 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
This is the horse maybe finally been put a little bit in front of the cart. And that you would think that if the airlines are to look at this and say, oh, we now have a regular service that would be able to bring people to the airport, we might put on a few flights maybe a bit earlier, or we might put on a few flights a bit later. That would be my hope. No, it mightn't come true, but we'll see how it goes. That's on the Green Clare page on the Echo. But Pat, your thoughts about Shannon?
Well, sure, it's a good thing to see the passengers number going up, but you heard 3.3 million before the crash in Shannon, so it's like, ready to cater for another million and a half. And
I'm open to correction. We've no flights to Germany.
No.
No.
We've no flights to Holland.
Mm.
No.
Germany, a huge market.
Huge market, yeah.
We used to, though, didn't
we? We did. But we don't have them currently. Mm. And Holland as well. And we'd say Frankfurt, major hub worldwide. Mm. And Amsterdam, Schiphol. The same thing.
Mm.
And that, again, that I think it would be, I know you hear the Cathal Crowe on about it, and Timmy Dooley has been on about it as well, that if you were to get flights to there, it increases the chances of more people traversing, because you can then catch a flight to, if you want to go international, or, you know, transatlantic.
Or it can work the other way.
That's the point.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And it could be that no more than back in the day when some of the Aeroflot flights used to be coming in from Russia in the early hours of the morning or the very, very late at night, that if some of these, a slot could be got. Because if you look at Shannon at the minute, the American flights come in, we'll say half five to half six in the morning. There mightn't be anything else arriving until 11 or 12 o'clock during the day. You have huge holes.
And I
great capacity.
There haven't been that many, if any, extra flights added in 2024.
Not a huge amount. It's a bit disappointing.
Yeah, there's a Chicago flight from, I think.
The Chicago one came back. I think that's May to October.
But haven't been any extra Ryanair flights announced out of Shannon for quite some time, and you'd love to think. I mean, that's where a lot of the growth came back in the early noughties.
Yeah. Now again, you know, you can't put all your eggs into one basket, but I would agree with you, in relation to that.
You're no line last year in April, Porto, Beatrice and Liverpool, as well as additional capacity on the popular destinations such as Malaga, Faro, and Atlanta.
Yeah, but like, you know, we've said
during pre-holiday times.
We've said it before. You've over 30 buses a day from Limerick going to Dublin Airport.
And likewise from Galway.
Yeah.
Where are these people flying to?
They're flying to destinations that they can't get to from Shannon.
Yes, that is true. I mean, people who want to go certain places, they have to go to Dublin to do it. And
like, I was in Germany last year, Jim, and I had to get a flight. I got a flight from Shannon to Gatwick to Frankfurt, and unfortunately had to come back Frankfurt to Dublin and get the bus back down.
Why?
Because there's no flights from Shannon to Germany.
But how did you get out there?
I went Shannon to England, to Gatwick.
I
got a connection from Gatwick to Germany.
Yeah. Well, Michael now is in Canada, and he was home a month ago there. The time he was sick before, but he came home again last Saturday morning. But he used to come into Dublin from Toronto. And there's a huge lot of Irish people in Canada. It's a pity they haven't. They were trying to get Air Canada back into Shannon.
Air Canada had been in Shannon, had they?
They had, but I think around COVID time they went and they didn't come back.
No, but look at the transatlantic, John, right? Boston, the most popular service, 100,982 passengers. Owen Ryan has this on page 8 of The Champion. 97,195 between Shannon and New York, and Newark, 60,917. So that's 250,000 passengers to the UK, to the USA.
Yeah.
That's a huge chunk of passengers.
It is.
You know, it's an eighth of the traffic at the airport is transatlantic to New York and Boston.
Well, hopefully we'll be sitting here in this program, with the help of God, next year, and we'll be looking at maybe 2.5 million or 2.7 million,
but it will go up. As well, isn't there a group of business people from the Middle East, which was on the papers there a couple of weeks ago, trying to buy land down around Erkel. They have 600 acres to set up another new airport in Erkel.
Oh, yes. Surprise, surprise, that's near Dublin. Sure, what could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Mm. Yes.
Okay, we'll leave that for the moment anyway. Good to see that the figures are climbing, to see them climb even faster.
Yeah, and that they brought the buses back into the proper bus service into the airport.
Into the airport.
And we hope we'll get a rail line in there as well.
Well, there are 2 million people anyway going through Shannon last year. The Cliffs of Moher have 1.38 million. And that's on the front page of the Clare Champion, Pat. Great. I mean, it sounds good in one sense.
Yeah.
And they're talking about buses as well.
Cliff's chief admits fewer buses is a positive for the local people. The general manager of the Cliffs of Moher visitor experience has revealed that there was a total of 1.38 million visitors to the tourist attraction in 2023, which is down 14% on the 2019 figures. Geraldine Enright this week told Clare Rural Development SPC meeting there were interesting happenings in terms of visitors to the Cliffs and how visitor numbers were changing post-COVID-19 pandemic, particularly on the group side as a result of what was happening and the lack of availability of tourist accommodation. She confirmed to Clare County Council officials there are 19% less coach visitors coming to the Cliffs of Moher since 2019, and there are 6% less coaches on the roads since 2019.
Does that mean that they're stuffing more people into fewer coaches?
Yeah. Well, it looks like
they are the bigger coaches.
Well, yeah. there are more. I mean, there's
36% less buses, yeah. John.
But 19% more
people.
It says 19% less visitors on the buses. But if you think about it, there's a third less buses on the roads, but the number on the actual buses is higher.
Yeah.
Now,
is that a good or a bad story?
I struggle to see how they are trying to spin this as a good news story.
Well, you see,
the question I would ask, John, is how were they allowing this to happen in the first place?
Right.
Like, a third of the figures for, but that's a huge number.
Mm.
And to say, it basically means that a huge chunk of the buses that were turning up to the airport are empty.
Yeah.
So why are they allowing 52-seater buses to turn up empty? Could they not use smaller means of transport? You know, look at, we'll say, our local link and stuff like that. At least, you know, we say 20-25 people, if that's the case.
Yes.
They're not a big 52 bus trying to get around Blake's Corner.
And they're open 13 hours a day now for the summer. 13-hour Cliffs opening to spread the visitor numbers.
You see, there's a fear that all this traffic, which sounds like, that's great, the old tourism in West Clare, Mid Clare is an important tourist spot and backed up by these numbers that are thrown into the pot. But in reality, of course,
it's not because
they're buzzing off.
By car or to
some other village.
They come from Dublin or from Galway and they disappear back there again.
1.4 million people, if you do the sums on that per day, it's a not insignificant figure.
I
said, what is the annual, what is the contribution of each of those visitors to County Clare?
It's very little.
Very little.
I would imagine it is quite small.
Yes, a few bob in the shop.
Yeah.
And the centre there. And that's it. That's important because there are few local people.
Yeah.
There's a young scientist exhibition project in that. In fact, what we've been discussing, it just struck me now, what we've been discussing since the commencement, one was the health situation in the Midwest. Okay? And now we've been talking about an aspect of the tourist business in the Cliffs of Moher area. Out of that there are at least two positive projects that could be done by students in schools.
Hmm.
Okay?
Yes.
I'm surprised. Because it's primarily statistical, do you know?
Could I give you a third one, John?
You could.
Page 5 of the Champion. Our Clare roads are being neglected in favour of greenways? Councillor PJ Kelly is on about the state of repair of rural roads, the April meeting of Clare County Council heard. Now, I like some of the lines he has here in relation to it. He said he wasn't against greenways, but rural roads do need to be maintained. Quote, there seems to be plenty of money for those greenways, but those people who are entitled to essential services are not getting them. And the biggest topic that comes up in the Killaloe Municipal District with the councillors is basically the state of our roads.
Well, Luke, on Tuesday last, Marie and myself were making our way from Scariff to a funeral in South Roscommon. Okay. We were rushing, well, we weren't overly rushing, but we were watching the clock to get to 11 o'clock Mass. And about 2 or 3 miles on the Whitegate side of Portumna. That, you know, that road is quite narrow indeed.
Yep.
I hit a pothole on the road now. And I knew I had
damage
done immediately. And we were now a good bit from the parish we were heading to. But we had help from so many people. We eventually got a new tire and we got the car back and
we got down
for the burial part of it. I don't know how many people said to me, John, did you take a photograph of that hole? I said I didn't because it was too dangerous to bloody well stop. Okay. All they said, the common cant was, you should. And Galway County Council are paying out compensation for situations like that.
Yes.
Now, funny thing about it, I thought about our friends from North Clare that have been complaining for the last couple of months about the state of the roads up there. And I don't know if I had much empathy, but by God, after that particular day, I had, you know, anger steaming out my left ear and my right ear.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm fully in support of the argument. More money must be spent on our roadway before we have...
Our rural roadway.
Our rural roadway.
And there's another story there on the opposite page to that, and maybe we'll talk about it after the break. The whole thing, it's not just the roads, it's the whole rural area is on its knees. But listen, we've reached half time, we've gone beyond half time, we've played extra time, Pat. what piece of music would you relax us with? From all the anger that we've been talking about here over the last half an hour.
With a brought back like to his first anniversary of his death. Do you know the way to San Jose?
Lovely. Do you know the way to San Jose? Burt Bacharach. Thanks, Pat. You're very welcome back. You're listening to Local Media This Week on Scariff Bay Community Radio, sponsored by Roots Griffin Photography. We had Do You Know the Way to San Jose from Burt Bacharach. There was Pat's choice, and we'll have another piece of music, hopefully at the end of the programme. So in part two, as we generally talk about East Clare items in part two, but just before we do, we were looking at a report there from the Clare chair of MOCRA, and it's in the Clare Champion. In fact, it's on page 4 in the Clare Champion. And I suppose the outlook, unless something is done, the outlook looked bleak for rural County Clare. And I suppose It's the messages that Clare Mockrew, they're presenting this to the politicians, and they did during the week. The chairperson of Clare Mockrew, Katrina Powers, says that the difficulty in securing a home in rural Ireland is driving young people away, and scores of Clare Mockrew members have been forced to emigrate in recent times. And that is, you know, that is an indictment on...
Is that, but I mean, the opening, that article by Andrew Hamilton.
Yes.
The opening paragraph is frightening. It says, rural Clare is on the verge of collapse.
Hmm.
And unless urgent action is taken, the current generation of rural Clare people will be the last one raised outside of towns and cities.
Yes.
I was in Tulla today. Okay? And there's building going on left, right and centre there. And was going on over the last few years. Anything but the negative kind of message that's coming out of Andrew Hamilton's. Well, it's the chairperson of Clare Mockrew, as you said. Katrina.
Well, I suppose, John, we've discussed this before.
We did.
That where a wastewater treatment system has been put in place,
yeah,
that allows for building.
Yes.
And therefore that town, and Tulla in the case you mentioned, you know, seems to have a future because there's a lot of houses being built there.
And would you say that's rural Ireland?
Oh, it is. But if you look at places which are do not have that, which is most places, to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at places like Budyke, mm-hmm. O'Callaghan's Mills, those places have no hope in the current climate of new houses going up.
So should we be actually focusing on that particular objective?
We should, but I think those are the places. I don't think she's referring to, you know, places where there is development because of the fact that infrastructure is there. I would imagine she's referring to places, you know, in both East and West Clare, where there is no hope of development.
And I'd say, Jim, also referring to, it's very difficult now, if you have a fair amount of land and you have maybe two sons or three sons, and you have three members of the family, try and get them to get planning permission to build a house for them on the farm is extremely difficult.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'd say that's probably part of what she's referring to there as well.
Yeah.
Do you think?
Yeah, there is a lot. There is. It is very difficult, John, to if I give one of my lads a site.
But once more, it's a political decision to impact on the actual, what do we call the...
Well, it has a huge effect, John, on social affairs in rural areas.
Yes.
Yeah, and they want to push. They want to push everybody from the country as much as they can into towns and cities.
Well, I don't know.
With the exception of Clare, Pat, because you can't get permission to live in our towns or villages because of Irish Water. Yeah. No wastewater treatment. Mm,
my solution to that before is if you want to settle in O'Callaghan's Mills, then you build a house, you build a septic tank, as people did in the past, but you commit to linking into the infrastructure when Irish Water puts
provides
in place.
Yeah.
And I think that would be a perfectly good solution. Yeah. It would save villages, and at the same time you are, in the long term, going to link in with... But of course, the question is, when will the infrastructure be provided?
Well, that's where, again, now it's a bit like the health one, where we find that we lacked a vision. Now, ministers have been speaking over the last year, they've been speaking about the difficulties which restrictive planning laws have.
Hmm.
Okay? So let's put, you know, the question to them next time we have them in.
And if you look at... John, I mean, you live here in East Clare and you've been here for many decades. East Clare, people come from all over the place and have done to live in East Clare. I've no doubt Roscommon is just as good and West Cork and East Limerick and whatever. But living in a rural area, there is a fantastic quality of life.
And it's very, very necessary for the inhabitants of the rural areas to be conscious that how they keep the rural area is really how it's going to help it to survive.
But the planners don't take the quality of life in East Clare into consideration.
Yeah.
They say Bodike doesn't have an infrastructure, so therefore no more building there.
So we must look this year. We must look to the actual the political vision that's coming.
And this comes from Dublin.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does, yeah. When you're going to have elections coming up, these things should be put on them, and they should be put fairly firm on them as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Take Trump down in what's the name of the place?
Doombay.
Yeah. And I mean, the paper is telling us that he says there'd be 300 workers working in the complex in the resort. This year. Mm. Now, 300 workers.
Plus 60 caddies, John.
Plus 60 caddies, that's right. That's nearly 400, John.
Mm. Yes.
Now, 400 is as good as a factory.
It's huge, you know. Huge in West Clare and in a place like Doombeg.
There'll be no word spoken against Trump in Doombeg.
No, there is not. Mm. So we must appreciate, you know, why they take that stance.
Yes, well, it's obvious. I mean, if 300 people are employed, and that spreads out to other businesses as well.
Okay. So I take a more optimistic view of rural Ireland.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly East Clare.
Yes, yeah. Okay. Recently, or last year, I brought my two grandchildren to Craiganone. And I know John has, Craiganone is very close to your heart, John. But brought my two grandchildren there. One was very impressed, one wasn't quite as impressed. there's a young man who likes to see fighting going on and has a particular interest in weapons. And he was in his element.
What age are we talking about?
We're talking about 6 and 5.
Oh, idea.
But there was a Viking day in Craiganone at the end of August last year, around the end of the summer. And it was absolutely brilliant.
And you're recommending it, aren't you?
I am, because it'll come back, is it next weekend?
Yes, next weekend.
It's back in Craiganone.
Craiganone again, yeah.
I mean, there was one particular thing where these Vikings, maybe about 12 or 15 Vikings, they enacted a battle inside in the ring fort.
How good were they?
They were flaking one another. I mean, nobody got hurt or anything, but they were flaking one another. And so many people standing around, particularly children, and they're looking at
mouths open. Yeah.
And they were dressed in the usual regalia with swords and axes and all sorts of sophisticated weaponry of the day.
And now your two boys going to go, are they looking forward to it?
I was talking to them today on the phone, and yes, the boy certainly is looking forward to it.
Yeah.
The girl didn't like the violence, but she went behind. But they love Craiganone.
Lovely.
And there were so many different things in Craiganone. So it's on next weekend, and it's covered well in the papers.
It is.
So I would say
it's covered well, Jim, and times of the day that there will be the battle.
Yeah, Pat,
scenes.
You're looking at the living section.
It's on the living section there of the Clare Champion. I see it on the echo as well, Jim. Craiganone on alert for Viking invasion this May Bank Holiday. Norse warriors will descend on Craiganone this May Bank Holiday weekend, May 4th to 5th, when the County Clare Visitor Attraction is transformed into a Viking village. Highlight of the village invasion at Craiganone will be a battle on the Castle Green at 11 a.m. and 12:30 p.m., 2 p.m. and 3:30 p.m. daily. Warriors demonstrate their fierce skills in battle. So, I think there will be a big crowd there, because they recently had a weekend festival there where they had different skills, and they had a craft fair and all. And I see Ellen O'Callaghan had a photograph up on Facebook, and the car park was packed.
Yeah, it's a lovely place to
be.
You can stroll around.
Yeah.
And
have they widened the road entrance?
There's €1 million worth of money going to be spent there now this year, John.
Okay.
And the car park and all that area is going to be on a part of it.
We have a Tungraini man sitting around the table. And there's a story on page 13. Dan Danaher has a story of bats in Tungraini Luke, holding up things.
Well, it's a good headline, all right. The bet signal goes up, yeah. Plans for industrial, or said to demolish an existing garage and build a few light industrial units there. It'll be on the Raheen Road, we'll say, just up past the top of Raheen Hill. Is where it is, and they're saying that the authority are looking for further information, and they're saying that the area is located in an area of high suitability for multiple bat species and located in close proximity to two recorded bat roosts. I can confirm that because having walked that road on a number of occasions, there are plenty of bats around the place at different times of the year, all right. So, yeah, so the applicant has to get a suitably qualified ecologist to assess the potential of the building for use by roosting bats. So that sometimes is a way that they sort of try and get around these things, that if an area, we'll say, for the bats to sort of, you know, an old bat house.
Yes.
You know, to let them go accommodate there as well. So
I think they put an old bat house up in the, on the bypass in Innes there. It's just there. You'll see it on the side of the road as it went to Innes there a few years ago. But I don't think that the bats didn't go into it.
Yes. So it's empty. You can't force them. But yeah, bats are, I mean, they strike terror in some people.
Do
they? Absolute terror. Mm. And then, but they're the most gentle, you know, creatures, and they eat more flies and, you know, a lot of insects. They gobble them up.
And they thousands a night.
Yes.
And they leave your attic very dirty.
They probably do, yes. I remember a scarif man, and he had bats in his house, and his wife told him, either bats go or I go.
Which one?
I suppose she stayed anyway, said they must have got rid of the bats. But you can't just get rid of the bats either.
Okay, no,
you
know,
you can't.
You
have to do it properly. Mm. Okay, Pat, a very sad occasion in Killaloe and in Clonlara there over the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, it's there in both papers, Jim, this week about that young child down in Clonlara. Yeah. Such a gentle caring speak by Gordon Deegan has the story, and it's there in the Champion as well. And where they have the photograph there of the funeral and the family behind it. So it's tragic for the Lynch family about the, you know, the father, a 7-year-old Clonlara student, James Lynch, said he will forever love you. You will always be forever our beautiful boy. She addressing mourners at the son's funeral in Mass and St. Sinner's Church in Clonlara on Wednesday, James Lynch said to she, our amazing little boy, from your first breath, we have loved you so much with all our hearts. A first-class pupil at School Sinan, Nafa, Clonlara, she died following a tragic accident at Killaloe Hotel pool on Saturday while attending a party at the hotel. So, actually, it's very sad, and we wish the family
our
sympathies and condolences.
And we're coming in, Pat, aren't we? We're coming into the swimming season, and, you know, we're just alerting people, please be careful.
Yeah, be careful. Yeah. Okay. And you can't take your eyes off children as well, you know.
No.
They just stray away, and I don't know whether he was swimming or whether he just went into the pool, or I don't really know the details of it, but it is a sad occasion for him anyway.
Yeah.
Okay, and I suppose on a slightly medical matter as well, the blood clinic is coming to Scariff.
On Monday night, Jim.
Tomorrow night.
Yeah.
So five to eight, roughly, give or take, five
it's
or 10 minutes.
It's here, isn't it?
Yeah, it's building here, yeah.
Near
yeah.
where our studio is. Yeah. So please give blood, because blood is always needed. So if you can give blood, and if you're
very important
to blood, and if you're within a certain age, I think is it 65?
Yeah, I don't know.
It's the upper age, I'm not sure what the lower age is, but you'll find details in the paper this week.
Mm. I see the other one giving out pins during the week for people, and I see men, I don't know where he was from, I forget now, he had 100 pints of blood.
That's right, down West Clare.
And just to bear in mind, you have to pre-book, you can't just turn up on the day, you have to pre-book an appointment.
For the blood?
Yeah, for the blood, yeah.
Mm. Okay, John.
Yeah.
Our local TD, Michael McNamara, is having another tilt at Europe.
He is. And we wish him well. But he has European and some global experience.
He does. I know he has worked in Poland before, maybe
elections.
For the United Nations.
UN. Yes. Absolutely.
And he's worked in Afghanistan. Mm. This is before he became a TD in the first place. Things like elections and election monitoring and those kind of activities.
Yes.
So his heart could be over there.
His heart?
Could be in Europe.
It could be. His body could be there too.
It could. Well, anyway, he's announced officially, it was being rumoured for a while, that he's going. And I suppose while we're talking about elections, we have local elections and European elections coming up soon, and it's important, John, that people can vote.
When is registration finishing? Because people could find themselves without the vote as a result of not being on the register.
On the register. I know you can check the register.
20th of May, John.
Pardon?
The 20th of May.
20th of May.
Good stuff. Individuals can just register themselves to vote online by going to checktheregister.ie and provide their date of birth, PPS number and air code.
Can they do it without going to a computer?
They can, yeah. Well, they need to do this before Monday, May 20, in order to be able to vote in the local and European elections on June 7.
Wonder is there somewhere they can go to check it?
Citizens of other EU countries resident in Ireland can vote in the election for the European Parliament, which will be held on June 7 as well. But although they can register online for the local elections, they will have to download and submit a hard copy from the Czech register in order to be eligible to vote in the European Parliament elections from Ireland.
Hmm. The 20th of May, anyway, is...
Yeah. Anyone with questions can call or text Claire TPN at 087-161-7375 or email Sarah at claireppn.ie.
Okay, so the contracts are there. It's on page 6.
It's page 6 of the Clare Champion.
In the Clare Champion.
And just the number there again, if anyone, 087-161-7375.
And if you want to stand for election, the 18th of May is the closing date.
Closing date.
Okay. And just to remind you that Scariff Bay Community Radio will bring you all the excitement of the local elections and the count on Saturday, the 8th of June. So tune in that day, and as soon as it happens, we will bring it to you. I was thinking of you when I was looking at this today, John. East Clare Golf Club.
It's a fine article, and it's an update to an extent, an update on the state of the course.
Yeah.
Okay. It has come out of trauma over the last five years, hasn't it? Really.
Yes.
It's come out of that now and stronger than ever. Tremendous amount of volunteer. Of course, that's always a safety. We need to watch on the dependency on volunteerism in the golf club. You know, I mean, the amount of seniors, ladies and gentlemen, who are making an input, Jim, it's quite astounding.
Well, it's great to see. I see Margaret McNamara won the ladies 18-hole Stableford competition in East Clare last week with 34 points.
That's our Margaret.
That's our Margaret from Fossebeck.
Yes.
Okay. And various other people are mentioned there, winners of other competitions, Breathe McNamara, Evelyn Skehan, Mary Fitzgerald, Mary Collins, Connie McKenna, Maureen Clune, Margaret Lynch, Mary Jo Minogue and Pauline Nugent.
It sweeps from Killaloe through Limerick, okay, the Clonlar area, and across into Limerick, into Meelick, and up through the mills, on to Tulla, up to Fagel, and Cahir, and and down to Whitegate.
Yeah.
So it's a binding.
Huge area, yeah.
Isn't it? It's got a community bonding and binding.
Okay.
Yeah.
I suppose, Pat, we had the sad, unfortunate case of a house burnt down in County Clare.
Yeah,
And we only have about 30 seconds left.
And Gardiner's investigation in circumstances will fire to destroy the house on the outskirts of Venus last night. The alarm was raised shortly after 11 p.m. when the blaze was reported to the house in Knockanine on the Tuller Road adjacent to the junction 13 of the M18 motorway. 3 units of clear fire and rescue service from the Venus station and local Gardiner attended to the scene. Last ambulance service was elected but wasn't required to attend the incident as the property was unoccupied at the time. The other house is under the road there at the roundabout,
yes.
And this was...
Are the Gardaí involved in...
Well, I suppose the Gardaí will be involved in investigating what happened, Jim, which I suppose...
Listen, we...
If it's been burned down during the night in Northern Dale, no one seems to know how it happened.
On page 13 of the Clare Champion on the East Clare page, Luke, you're looking at a piece there which has a big step forward for the walking route.
Yeah, well, we'll see about that. In the next few weeks, Dan Danner has the article there, basically the last Killeen Municipal District meeting, there was a presentation from Waterways Ireland in relation to the Greenway. There's been 2 consultation periods and now it's time to the lads to poo or get off the pot, because there is a new meeting due in the fourth, they said early May-ish,
yes.
So I would imagine it'll be advertised maybe in the next, shortly,
does the headline,
for the preferred route.
Does the headline belie the article? I was kind of scanning through the article for what is the big step forward.
But yeah, I'm sort of wondering myself, because the between consultation 1 and consultation 2, the issue in relation with the ESB in around the Clonlara side appears to have been
solved.
Solved might be a strong word for it, but they appear to have a compromise.
Yes.
But the big issue is, how is it going to get from Killaloe out to Scariff?
So there's been no big step forward there yet?
No, that's what we're awaiting. And Councillor Pat Burke sort of asked the question, and a very valid question, as to why no consideration being given to bring it out to Mount Shannon, and sort of that you'd have nice views of Holy Island on the way out, a big tourist attraction that they're trying to develop. Sure, what could go wrong? That would require a bit of common sense.
Well, or a bit of thought.
Maybe if we could start Scariff first, and then maybe extended on.
Pat, give us a tune, please, for the... First of all, thank you to everybody, to John S.
Welcome, Jim.
To Pat.
Thanks, Jim.
To Luke for hopping off the bench again. And we'll finish with a song if we have time, which we probably won't have. Maybe we'll get a bar or two of it.
And then there's other stories in the Clare Champion as well. We just touched on some of them, and we'd advise people to buy the papers and to have a look at the stories.
We only have an hour.
We just touched on some of the major ones. So we'll have a Belafonte, Ireland in the Sun.
Lovely.
And he died on April 25th last year, so it's his first anniversary.
Lovely. Okay, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again next Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. So from us, for now, goodbye and God bless.
This is my island in the sun, where my people have toiled since time begun. I may sail on many a sea, her shores will always be home to me. Oh, island in the sun, built to me by my father's hand.